Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going through the Constitution still. Well, we're not done, and we're actually hitting the 20th Amendment. But before we do, let me kind of do some, I don't want to say go backs, but let me kind of address some of the stuff that we've been covering and what we're trying to do here. So one of the problems we've had is some configuration issues. We've moved to a different broadcasting server and so forth. So anyway, and not that I can explain all the technical stuff. I probably could if I got exposed to it, but that doesn't matter. We've had some outages, and so some of those things are either self-inflicted or some of the things of just trying to resolve some overriding problems, because we want to get to a point where we don't want to have outages, and we would love it if, you know, everybody would just allow all messages to get through. But there are those who want to stifle, silence, and suppress information. And so it's common. And as a matter of fact, I have to accept the fact that what I'm trying to tell you and the information I give you is information that they don't want you to have. They don't want you to understand the Constitution. They don't want you to understand your rights. They don't want you to be empowered. Knowledge is power when it is acted upon. And so if I give you the knowledge and we figure out, you know, and give you the information of what you can do with it and how you can use it, you become pretty dangerous. And I think one of the things I've realized over time is in this era, you know, it used to be cool to know, you know, something about what was really important. And it is always cool to know about something that is important. And I can't think of anything that's more important right now today than the Constitution. So, you know, I'm trying to use that old peer pressure. Hey, if you want to be cool, you know, don't do that. Do this. Learn the Constitution, understand it, and help others understand the Constitution. You know, it's that old, maybe, you know, if you're old enough to, you know, the 60s, 70s, you know, that high school pressure. Hey, man, you want to be cool? Smoke this or you know, try this. Well, now let's try that same peer pressure for something that's really good, something that absolutely will put us on the road to restoring our liberties and restoring our law. Anyway, I can't emphasize enough how you keep on looking, and if you are watching and waiting for things to get better, they're not going to get better. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why Friday I decided to do a show that was really titled The Ratcheting of Tyranny Required Two-Party Support. In other words, you know, the party that you're embracing, is all the parties. As a matter of fact, I had this revealing conversation with Paul Venable when we were talking about the parties and so forth, and how I view all of the parties. Let's look at it this way. Let's just take a quick second, and let's look at, you know, this God-given Constitution, this creator, the divine hand of providence inspired Constitution. And let's look at this metaphorically as it is on the top of the mountain. I see the Democrats, and as a matter of fact, I see the big government. As I told you, there used to be limited government and big government paradigms, and then they all switched to big government because they started embracing. They became ignorant and didn't know and didn't understand limited government anymore. As everybody's, oh, no, we can do this. Oh, yeah, we have the authority to do whatever we want to do. When justices started lying, when Supreme Court justices and others actually started lying after the framers had passed on or moved away from the political arena, then there was nothing constraining them. There were no more firewalls on what I would say, and as a matter of fact, this is interesting, this is ironic, there were no more firewalls on on the corruption or the perversion of our government. In other words, the firewalls were the framers. The firewall, Madison and others kind of kept these people in check and said, no, you can't do that, and vetoed their attempts or what have you. So when these, if you want to call them good, righteous servants, which is a great label for them, these good, righteous servants, all of a sudden, you know, stepped away and felt that they had, you know, built the character up of this new generation, only to find out that they weren't as built up, or they didn't take on the same paradigms, because it didn't take much longer for both parties to be involved in big government. Bigger government and limited government became more and more limited. Or in other words, if we look at the firewalls were being torn down on the perversion of the Constitution and corruption in government. And the firewalls were going up on the enlightenment of society. You see, when government starts to become corrupt, it has to start perverting society. It has to actually get society to shift away. So instead of embracing and supporting discipline in society, they start encouraging behavior that is inappropriate, and they keep on pushing the boundaries. Today, look at where we are in pushing the boundaries. I mean, there was a time when Frank Zappa and Alice Cooper in music really pushed the boundaries, and people were just awestruck at how disgusting. And here's the interesting thing. Oh well, that, you know, they've ultimately crossed the line. That is just way too far, and nobody will ever go that far ever again. Are you kidding? If you look at what's going on today, it pales in comparison. And so it, you know, it's that downward spiral. So getting back to this mountain and the Constitution, metaphorically sitting on top of it, you have to look at, as the parties became big government, as the parties became antithetical to the Constitution, they started pulling on the Constitution. Now, the left is trying to pull the Constitution to the left off of the mountain. The right isn't trying to hold it up there. They're trying to pull it down to the right so that they can control it that way. All of these other parties, all of these other organizations, per se, that have, you know, formed themselves, have formed based on those exact same principles. They just changed the names so that you wouldn't recognize, oh, well, yeah, that's that party. Oh, that's the Whigs or what have you. Because what ends up happening is it's not like the leopards change their spots. They just find a new den to operate out of. And that new den for the Federalists was the Democratic Party. When I say the Federalists, as I was talking about on Friday, when I refer to the Federalists, I refer to the big government Federalists, because the little government Federalists ended up forming, they left, you know, the den of the Federalists, and they took on a new name for true limited government called the Republicans. And that was under Madison and Jefferson. So these are the things I'm covering on Friday. And this coming Friday, we're going to get more into this. The whole point I'm trying to help you understand is why it is critical that we look at the parties as the problem. Even when we start looking, until we have a party, and you, my friends, can create this party, you can go into the Constitution Party. You can go into the Independent American Party. These are two parties where the people of these parties are in a position of embracing the Constitution. They're not there fully, but they would be easier to get to the top of that mountain than trying to drag the Republicans, because I'm going to tell you something. You'll never get the Republicans on top of that hill. Unless you move to Wyoming, unless you move to, you know, the state of Wyoming, you're going to find the Republicans on the top of that hill, or close to it. They're not there, but they're close to it. And what I mean by that is that there are significant changes that have to occur. So we're going through that on Fridays. And so hopefully, and unfortunately, Friday we kind of got disconnected for a little while, but we got reconnected. But you can download that podcast, Friday's podcast. If you didn't hear it in its entirety, you're going to want to hear that in its entirety, because we're picking it up this Friday from where we left off, just like what we do with the Constitution. And so in other words, I've got two parallel lectures that I'm doing, the lectures on the Constitution and the lectures on the party at currently. And what we want you to do is we want you to understand how you can get and form that party. As a matter of fact, I'm working with a few people in different states in getting that party built at the top of the mountain. And it doesn't require much. It only requires centering the party on the Constitution. See, ironically, the Constitution Party isn't completely there. I mean, they're further along than many others, but, you know, there's not much difference in other ways. And so, you know, there's people in the Constitution Party that kind of cringe when I have to talk, but they cringe because they're a part of the family and nobody likes their family's laundry aired. But my point is this: unless we have the honest conversations and really, you know, expose what needs to be done and how to do it, what we need to do, then we're just allowing the elephant to exist in the room. And we can kill that elephant and remove it, but we first have to acknowledge it's there, talk about it, and figure out how to get it out the door. And so, I don't hate elephants. Just wanted to let you know. It's just metaphorically speaking. But when we come back, we're going to get back into the 20th Amendment after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I didn't lie, but I need to say this. As I keep on saying this, and I can't emphasize this enough, it is now or never. It is now that we really start doing it. And it humbles me to know that I'm working with such good patriots across this nation. And one of those great patriots is actually putting it all on the line by running for U.S. Senate out of Missouri. Now, I'm going to do this again. We've got one more week. I believe that they cut, you know, on election day, they cut off your ability to do campaign and the campaign management and so forth, donations. So what I'd like, and what I'd ask you to do, because we're going to bring Paul onto the show after the election to talk about this campaign
on the Constitution and how to do this. So one of the things that he's doing is he's going around the state using First Amendment petitions, working with people, grassroots people, whether they're a part of the party, whether they're just good supporters of the Constitution. He's going to build a movement on the Constitution. And that's, and in essence, he's going to be bringing people into the Constitution Party. And as he does this, I want you to understand this. As you bring people in on the Constitution, and as he moves the Constitution Party to that top of the mountain where it's fully focused on the Constitution, in other words, fixing the platform so it is, you know, myopically focused on the Constitution. We need this laser light pinpointing the importance of everything within that Constitution and demanding full compliance to it. We do this, and then it forces everybody to start realizing all of the things that are being done that are unconstitutional. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to be a math science, you don't, a scientist. You don't have to be, you know, the most deductive person in the world. I think any cretin can look at a clean platform that identifies the powers, roles, responsibilities, and properties that the federal government has, listing them right outright in black and white, and then telling everybody anything else they're doing is unconstitutional, because that's the plain truth. And that just, that, my friends, is a slap in the face, because as we turn around and we start looking at the EPA, Educate, NEA, all of these different bureaucracies that the federal government has created and is using as tools to destroy us, we realize that they're not doing their job. They're doing the bidding for people who hate liberty, hate America, and want to see us destroyed. So I can't emphasize enough to you. And what we want to do is, after the election, we're going to start identifying the organizations that are creating campaigns on the Constitution, campaigns for the Constitution. And what these are, folks, is these are precursor campaigns to start targeting the rhinos, because most people are absolutely fed up and recognize that, you know, that rhinos are really the problem. More importantly, if you can acknowledge that rhinos are the problems, then it's the other Republicans that aren't there either. And we need leaders to actually show these Republicans who claim to be constitutional, but they don't know it. They don't understand it. We prove this all the time. As we inject leaders on the Constitution, they will follow. And they will ultimately become a part of that party on top of that mountain. So what we're doing is we're getting these different states in Missouri and in other states. We don't want to list them at this point. We want to start exposing after the election. That's what my desire is start bringing these people so that you can start seeing, oh, wow, this is happening. This is going on. And yes, you can get involved. You can create your campaign on the Constitution. Now, keep in mind that this is, you know, these are like campaigns, just like, help me out here, just like, you know, election accounting and so forth. You have to fully account for the dollars going in and where you're spending that and so forth. But that's okay. That's okay. At least you're not funding the warfare against communism, the warfare that is against our liberty, the warfare that is trying to destroy us. We're helping subsidize that campaign of saving America. That's one of the reasons why we're working, and we will be working with you to actually pipe money into you, because ultimately, as we start getting the Reclaiming the Republic show airing in your states, then we will actually be able to fund you and help you have, at least with the minimum things like your domain presence, those types of things, so that you can actually be far more effective and not have, you know, not watch, you know, things get sucked up, you know, for the party to miss, you know, like we see currently with all of these different, whether it be the party or these other organizations, all the money gets sucked up and they're using it, and you're going, why are you doing that? Why are you giving money to that guy? Just because he supports the Second Amendment? But look, at he's terrible on education. Folks, we can't be played anymore. We have to stop allowing them to manipulate us with divisive means, because they've been doing it for a long time, and that's what Satan's good at. So if you have a chance this week, if you have a chance to do this week, contribute to Paul Venable's campaign. Anything you can do to help him, you know, inject money, because the money that he gets into his campaign before the campaign is over, he'll be able to roll into his campaign on the Constitution, because he's going to be initiating his campaign on the Constitution is really his campaign against Josh Hawley in the U.S. Senate, because he's going to roll, and in 2 years, he will be laying the groundwork in the first year to stating the case why Hawley's got to go and why Schmidt needs to go as well. And so what we're doing, folks, is we're creating permanent campaigns to start highlighting the people that really have to go down at the county level and all the way up to the federal level. It'll be comprehensive, and it will be a full broad spectrum solution as far as our public servants. And if we get our public servants to do what they're supposed to do, and as long as we're doing what we're supposed to do, the immune system, which we're covering on Fridays, will actually work, and we will get it done. Anyway, as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And with that, the 20th Amendment. Now, the 20th Amendment was proposed in 1932 and ratified in 1933. Now, this was actually during Hoover's term. This was prior to FDR, if I remember correctly, because Hoover took office. Hold on here. You know, I'm going to prove myself wrong if I'm not careful. And so while I'm kind of babbling on and on, I'm going to be looking up the presidents of the United States, right? So that would be on Wikipedia. And so, as you're figuring it out, you should be, you know, going, well, so, because Hoover did one term, right? And so when we look at the presidents, the list of the presidents of the United States, and we go down to 1932. So 1933 is when Franklin Delano Roosevelt took office. So he was elected in 32, but Hoover took office in 29 and went to March 1933. So in other words, this amendment was proposed underneath, and the workings of this amendment was done under Hoover. Why is that important? Because Hoover, even though he was a Republican, because this goes right into what I was talking about, right into what I was laying out on Friday, how both parties have been working together. Hoover was a progressive. Hoover may have been a Republican because he was in a Republican administration, but he also was very close friends with Woodrow Wilson and was the friend that was allowed to write his biography. I believe Herbert Hoover was the one that wrote Woodrow Wilson's official biography. He was a hardcore progressive. During Harding's administration, it was Hoover that kept on harping on Harding to go, hey, we need to inject money. He wanted to do exactly what Obama and other progressives had done by throwing money into the populace to help increase the debt. But Harding goes, well, why? And he goes, well, let me think about that. And 6 months, but you know, as he was thinking about it in the passing 6 months, he realized, hey, it looks like our problems are correcting themselves. And he went to Hoover. He goes, why did you even recommend that? And Hoover really didn't have much to say. But that is just how maniacal the progressives have been. they put on whatever spots. All of these people of these two parties, they all wear spots. And, oh, well, their spots are black, their spots are whites, whatever, red, blue, it doesn't matter. So Hoover set up this amendment. And so what we want to do is we kind of want to help you understand, because the 20th Amendment actually has a little part on the Electoral College and the terms of presidencies and so forth. And Section 1 states, well, it will state what it states when we come back after these two promos. So my apologies. We kind of lingered a little too long on the monologue and the immune system and getting that party on top of the mountain. Well, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so it's kind of important to help lay out the argument in, you know, looking at the bigger picture. It helps us understand some of the details that are going on. So technically, I don't understand, to be honest, I do not understand the importance of why they made this initial change, but this is the year that they made the change in this amendment to the Constitution. Now, so, folks, look at all of the things. If I say anything that you garner, anything that you grasp, look and listen to this. If it comes down to something that is very, very, very specific in the Constitution, like 30,000, a representative shall not, you know, represent any more than, it shall not exceed 30,000 citizens. That's right there in Article 1, Section 2, if I remember correctly. What does that mean? It means that the Constitution delineates how many the House of Representatives, a representative in the House of Representatives can represent. Period. 30,000. In other words, you cannot change that number. Congress has no authority to make any changes to anything within that document. Oh, well, we only have this many chairs, so we need to change that. No. No, you can't do that. Yes, if you need to change it because you have a limitation of chairs, then what you have to do is you have to amend the Constitution. And this right here proves that at least somebody understood that, because they actually changed the day and galvanized it in the Constitution as to when a president would take office. And right here, the terms, this is what it says, Section 1. The terms of the president and vice president shall end at noon on the 20th day of January, and the terms of senators and representatives at noon on the 3rd day of January, of the years in which such terms would have ended if this article had not been ratified, and the terms of their successors shall then begin. So in other words, it hard codes when the president, the acting president, steps down and when the new president is inaugurated, is sworn in and takes office. Noon on the 3rd for Congress and noon on the 20th. It's now in the Constitution. In other words, they can't change it. What would happen if all of a sudden somebody came along and said, hey, we can't swear the president in until February 4th? No, the Constitution mandates it has to be done on this day. It's the same thing with your representation of 30,000 people. It's the same thing with everything delineated. Do they have the power to do that? No. And they don't have the power to arbitrarily change that, to say, oh, well, we can make any changes we want. Section 2. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall begin at noon on the 3rd day of January, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. So right here, they are given the latitude to change that. Now, if you go back to Article 1, where is the language anywhere in Article 1 that says that by law, Congress shall change that? That, you know, they by law, they can actually give themselves more representation. That language does not exist. In other words, it's hard-coded, folks. They don't have the latitude to change it. Where did this established requirement come from? It came from the states. The states said, you will not represent more than 30,000. You will only do these things. They cannot assume new. Every time they do, they create unconstitutional government. They're violating the Constitution. The third section, if at the fixed time for the beginning of the term of the president-elect shall have died, the vice president-elect shall become president if a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president-elect. So, in other words, after a person is elected, there still can be a disqualification of the president. Do you understand this? Obama should have been disqualified. It doesn't matter that the people elected somebody. If the people elected somebody that was not qualified, there is still the standard that the president must be qualified. And so when Congress is in office and they're looking at the president and the vice president coming into office, they have a legal obligation to ensure that they are qualified. How in the heck did Kamala Harris become the vice president? They should have disqualified her. The problem is, oh, well, nobody tells us that we have to do it, but it states right here that they have to be qualified. Who's going to do it? You know, Congress is really big about creating bureaucracies and government and, you know, managing and controlling. But when it comes to controlling themselves and when it comes to actually holding standards, boy, that just never seems to happen. It never seems to, it doesn't amaze me at all that they want to create laws to create standards for professionals. I don't know what you do. But I bet you anything, there are congressional federal laws that dictate what you have to do if you're a plumber or what have you. At least they do this at the state level. And I wouldn't doubt that the federal government gets involved in some professions as well to say you have to have these types of qualifications. You have to have this, like for it to be a judge. Oh, well, you have to have a JD degree. What? You have to be a part of the bar association. What? They can't. Where do they have the authority to do these things? But even worse yet, folks, they have no standards for themselves. As long as they do the bidding for those who pay, they can do what, because that's all they are. They're shills. Our political system is set up to allow shills to operate. Instead, our political system was designed to hold people accountable to the Constitution and operating within the Constitution and only the Constitution. So anyway, back to the shall, if the president elect shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president elect shall act as president until a president shall have qualified. And the Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice-president-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president or the manner in which one who is to act shall be selected and shall and such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice-president shall have qualified. So in other words, you know, when you really look at, you know, these alternate scenarios that there may be a problem getting the president into office, they have delineated exactly how that needs to be managed. They delineated exactly what needs to happen. There needs to be these qualifications. And then it basically says here, Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor the vice-president-elect shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president. So in other words, Congress does have the authority if we've got a president. So in, let's just say in the case of the Electoral College and the 12th Amendment was executed and they couldn't come up with, you know, a clear president, and then they voted for president and they brought in a president and a vice president that wasn't qualified. Let's look at January 6th, where Trump and Biden weren't even there, that all of a sudden Congress reaches deep, because Congress could have done this. Congress could have reached deep into, you know, who they were voting for, into somebody else, with Kamala Harris or what have you. They weren't tied to Kamala Harris only being vice president. So let's just say they chose Kamala Harris as president. And let's just say they chose, you know, somebody else that had a questionable citizenship. And next thing you know, they come up to the point where they can't be seated because they can't qualify. Then Congress would then, by law, choose who would serve as president until the people can choose a president again. But you know what? Congress isn't going to do that. Congress is going to make sure that what the party has done in all of their efforts over the past 2 years to basically sterilize the environment to ensure that one of the two given choices that they have come up with will get seated. How dare Congress do their job? How dare Congress follow the Constitution? Folks, do we have a constitutional Republican form of government, or do we have a party form of government? That's a good question, right? Okay, so Section 4 of the 20th Amendment. The Congress may by law provide for the case of the death of any of the persons from whom the House of Representatives may choose a president whenever the right of choice shall have developed upon them. For the case of the death, gets a little morbid, but you know, they were trying to cover all the bases in the 20th Amendment. I wonder why, though. Who was coming into office that made this a big concern? Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so this is kind of interesting because, again, this amendment came in as a precursor to FDR. And you go, well, you know, look at this. They're really trying to address, excuse me, all of these different scenarios if the president died. And I can tell you that there was a heated debate between the progressive Hoover and the progressive Roosevelt. And if you understand what was going on, America wanted. This was a dark day in America, just like today, because we now have a president today, sitting president, unconstitutionally sitting. Keep in mind, we have somebody that was rammed down our throats unconstitutionally sitting in that Oval Office. And what we're dealing with today is somebody that is destroying us, creating this need and want. I mean, it is starting to become rampant because everybody is suffering because they're having to spend more and more. Many people don't have disposable income anymore. Many people have been basically put out, or they're living on, you know, these hopes that, you know, this continued, you know, protection from, you know, rent seizure, you know, rental seizures, because people haven't been paying because the government has been protecting them. And oh, as they think the government's protecting them, the reality is the government is allowing our border to be porous so that all sorts of people can come here and eventually displace you and I. I am here to tell you, folks, we have a big day of reckoning because we're facing very similar times. Why was it a dark day in the 30s? Well, the market crashed. The economy was, we were heading into the depression at this point in time, folks, because Hoover was doing everything he was supposed to do. He started manipulating, you know, the economy and the markets and so forth, and he set the stage for a tyrant to come into office. Well, there was these group of radical Republicans out there that weren't on board. You got to remember that when Hoover went up against the 18 1932 election with FDR, as he was running for office or re-election, the Republicans came to Coolidge and said, would you please come back? There were a lot of people that were on the Republican side. That this is before, you know, the global deep state had seized full control of the RNC. They were there, but they weren't in full control because there was talk about getting Coolidge to come back. Now, I'm not sure, nor am I convinced that that talk was to, you know, really get Hoover to step down. I believe that the intent was, and if you read Coolidge's autobiography, he talks about why, after 4 years, why he would never step back into office again, because he said, I may be progressive, but I'm not that progressive. I don't know how to operate that kind of government. Because what Hoover was doing was he was actually dealing, he created the New Deal. And that progressive New Deal that Hoover created is what FDR put on steroids. Bottom line, folks, when we look at what this amendment does, this amendment actually shows the underbelly of what was happening in America, and the Republicans were playing on this hope that Congress could get involved and, you know, that the president was going to die, that FDR, because he was polio, they understood he was sick. The nation didn't see him that way, but they knew because they were there. I mean, the only people in the room saw that this guy was a cripple. They didn't have really good video and television and all of that. People lived by and how information was presented to them, you know, was at movie theaters. That's when you went to the movie theaters on a weekly or monthly basis to get updated with the national news. And you'd listen to the radio for the daily news. I mean, the way information flowed, it was very well managed and controlled. So Congress created and recommended, and this actually got ratified rather quickly to where, as we read in Section 4, the Congress may by law provide for the case of the death of any of the persons from whom the House of Representatives may choose a president whenever the right of choice shall have developed upon them, and for the case of death of any persons from whom the Senate may choose a vice president whenever the right of choice shall have developed upon them. In other words, any president or vice president that they shall have the ability to choose. Interesting, isn't it? You ever thought about that? So you hear about Nancy Pelosi being the Speaker of the House, being the one that steps in, and the Vice President, well, who steps in that case? Well, whoever the majority leader is in the Senate would probably be the one that would step in because they're the ones, well, not necessarily so. You know, the Speaker may have been chosen earlier on, and then all of a sudden they may have lost faith and they don't have the ability to unseat the Speaker, but this doesn't create a secession. What this does is it gives Congress both the House for the President and the Senate for the Vice President, gives them the ability to choose who is going to sit as President and Vice President. That's what it says. Sections 1 and 2 shall take effect on the 15th day of October following the ratification of this article. This article shall be an inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission. Ah, we have a First Amendment that actually had a sunset. They put this sunset on it because this was a shot across the bow to the Democrats and to the progressives over the life of FDR. They basically said, you know, we're going to put this out there and we don't care if this doesn't get ratified in 7 years because we know that FDR will be out of office after 8 years. But this is our FDR amendment. being able to take control and not allow the progressives to actually continue doing the seeding of progressives. So it gave Congress the ability to pull this stuff back. Folks, it's ironic when we start looking at this, because FDR, in some ways, got the final word, because he actually went into office a third time. And so that created the need for another amendment. And so the 21st Amendment is what we're dealing with right now. And this is the repealing of the Prohibition Amendment. So remember, the Prohibition Amendment was, what, the 19th or whatever it was. Yep, it was ratified in 1919. So they went basically 14 years to produce and, you know, to restrict the production and basically control the production of alcohol to ensure that distilled liquors and those types of things were not being produced. And so the federal government in that period of 14 years was able to grow this law enforcement bureaucracy, the FBI and so forth. And so what happened as they repealed this, did the federal government downsize and sunset all of this enforcement? What did they do? They started assuming new laws, new roles, and new responsibilities. That's what they do, because just like the Department of Interior under the Democrats with Polk being president at the time, you know, they wanted to make sure that they kept their bureaucracy and they kept their controls. And more importantly, they had greater restrictions, greater burdens, and greater taxes upon the Western states than any other state, so that the federal government would have this ability of affluence and control over the Western states, which is all a violation of the Constitution. They don't have the authority to do any of that. States are fully sovereign. States are supposed to be equal sovereigns in the Union. And instead, these maniacal men in Congress and in the federal government decided, no, you know what? We're going to, you know, maintain this control over them. This goes down that old adage that when a person obtains some level of leverage and or control, they start to become abusive. They start to, you know, become more draconian and more controlling. They seek more and more power. I mean, the framers were very aware of that, which is why they did, which is why they constrained the federal government the way they did, so that they only had these very specific powers. This is why it is so important to understand what those powers are. This is why a party on top of that mountain needs to highlight what those powers, roles, responsibilities, and properties are, out to the nth degree of what is defined in the Constitution. In so doing, the party will then definitively be able to say this is all they can do. Everything else is unconstitutional. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.